Ed than absurd. Fighters lay mid-action, in mouldering stasis, hands and gift wings and weapons still on each other. We read these corpse dioramas for the stories of their creation. They have corvids, I said. Strategizing without speech, the absurd were driving bio-rigged weapons. Jesus, I said. Jesus, it's an army. I mean, it's an army. Shockingly few combatants were left alive. A few mortally wounded Arieke cycled their legs in the air, craning eyes. One cried out in language, telling us that it was wounded. Spanish dancer touched its gift wing. The absurd moribund were dying with too much focus to notice us. On some I saw the bleed from fan wings newly excised. There were new recruits to that force, even among the dying. Pinioned under Ariakin dead was a woman still just alive, her broken aioli wheezing oxygen into her. She looked at Bren and me as we tried to calm her and ask her, "What happened here?" But she only stared, terrified or air-starved out of speech. At last we laid her back down and gave her water. We couldn't move her. Her aioli was dying. We found two others alive. One man couldn't be woken. The other was conscious only of his impending death. All we got from him was that the absurd had come. Bren indicated ripped uniforms.
"These are specialists."
He pointed at Runnels out of the battlefield.
"This wasn't. These were outriders. This was a guard group, around something, that came in first."
"The negotiators," I said. He nodded slowly at me.
"Of course. Yes. The negotiators. This was supposed to be a bloody parley. They gave it a try. My God."
He looked at the remnants around us.
"The languageless didn't even slow.
And now they're heading for the rest. For the main mass of the Tear Arieke army." We had to double back. We took an abandoned vehicle, cleaned the mess of war out of it. We sped along the cut, through the marks of thousands of hooves. I was pressed against the Arieke. Spanish and Baptist were crowding around the absurd. They were sketching marks in the air, and the captive, if I could still describe it so, was doing the same. It wasn't long before we saw a line of figures. Bren stiffened. I knew how weak our plan was, but we had no choice. "It's all right," I said. "They're Tear." A big, dirty, derelict band, dressed like penitents, a trudging little town. There were children among them. They looked at us through their masks. They were as intense as monks, too. Some backed away, muttered among themselves. A few temporary leaders came closer, and a few soldiers, refugee from that ruination, in scorched uniforms. The Arieke stayed back. They kept the self-deafened close, disguised its injury. The humans told us they'd run from the depredations of the absurd, from pioneer homesteads and bio-rigging farms. This was everyone running. They'd found each other, been joined by the AWOL and soldiers from defeated units. They were behind their attackers now, were following them to the city, like those preyfish that seek safety in their predator's wake. They had no plans, only the vague sense that this might keep them alive a few days longer. Their passage in the tracks of the enemy was a despairing homage to their own defeat. A militiaman told us.
"We were with Arieke, leaders, the most eloquent, I suppose, there to communicate. We were there to protect them, the negotiators, give them space, time, when they were trying to get through to..."
The soldiers had been instructed to do whatever was necessary while the Ariekin speakers struggled to make the absurd understand them.
"They were trying to talk to them."
"How?" I said.
"No how."
I thought he'd said, "No how," and didn't understand.
"There was no how," he said. "We wondered. We could see the absurd coming. They had flyers and weapons and vehicles, and there were thousands of them. We wondered what it was the Arieke were planning, what they'd cooked up. It was only... Jesus. They got ready by listening to Ez Kal on Dachip. A couple of us in the unit understand language. He paused at the inadvertent present tense.
They told me what Ezcal was saying in the recordings. You must make them understand, again and again, in all different ways. You must speak to them so they understand you.
The man shook his head.
That's what they got high on. When the absurd came, they shouted at them through loudspeakers.
But they're deaf, I said. He shrugged. The wind sent his greasy hair rippling from under his battered helmet.
We sent some of them out to meet the enemy. Close. Their plan must have been... Well, the absurd just came through them. To us.
There'd been no plan at all. I looked at Bren. There'd been no secret strategy. Only the knowledge of what had to happen, with no idea how.
They tried to do it by fiat, Bren said.
The Godrug had hoped their ineluctable instructions would carry this. What despairing deity. Jesus, I said. Do you think they thought it would work?
There were a lot of dead back there.
Where are the rest of your army? I said. Ezcal's army. The man shook his head.
Most of them, us, never wanted to fight, he said. They wanted to beg, but they can't even beg. Can't make them hear. They're retreating back to the city, getting behind the blockades.
He shook his head slowly.
Those won't stop them, he said.
There was nothing between the absurd army and the city and embassy town. The refugees watched us go, told us it was in the wrong direction, and shrugged when we ignored them. They gestured goodbye and good luck with a kind of dead politeness, a strange courtesy. At the edges of the mass, those most monkish ones watched us with hostility I'm certain most of them couldn't have explained. We travelled in their hoof churnings and stalked the absurd from just beyond their sight. From thickets, from behind rises. It rained. We sprayed muck. It didn't seem to get very dark that night. It was as if the stars and wreck were shining unnaturally, so I could lean against Spanish Dancer and watch it sketch hand signs with the Ariekes that was no longer a prisoner, and I could see the grey landscape. When dawn came, there were a few cams around us, gadding spastically. Intel gatherers for the army, still transmitting. Our sound and motion attracted them, and they paced with us in a flitting corona. I looked straight into the lens of one, through the air to someone watching an embassy town. We could hear the absurd now. They were just one segment of landscape over. The cams swarmed suddenly away, over flora in geography. A corvid flew close overhead on some frantic wartime job, and we had to hope it had not seen us, that we wouldn't be eradicated so close. There were no secret ways we could ensure a smaller group of absurd would find us, no ways we could split one section of their expedition from the others. Each languageless thought itself alone, though we knew that wasn't true. The closest this huge vengeful mass would have to generals would be its unspeaking vanguard. We passed their flank, hidden by landscape, and made our way to a place they'd find us. Finally, stinking in our suits, we left the vehicle. I was strongly conscious of what a scene we must have been. Four tear, me at the front, behind me Bren, tense and ready. The marks of the journey had made Ilsib easy to tell apart. They stood beside each other, each with a weapon poised. The Arieke ranged in a curve around us, as if they made up our group's fan wing. Spanish Dancer was closest to me, and watched me with several of its eyes. At the centre of the group stood the untethered, languageless. The thing that was no longer our enemy looked from one to another of its Ariekeen companions. It made a motion with its gift wing. One by one, most of the other Arieki responded in a similar way. It made me a bit breathless to see. There were two that didn't. Dub and Rooftop watched the motions of their companions. Nothing they could understand was occurring. Spanish Dancer said to me,
"They come now, we will see."
I stared a while and at last nodded. "You will," I said. "We will. They will."
"Let me,"
it said.
Two noises came out of it that meant nothing to me. It said something rapidly in language, and its companions, and Ill and Sib and Bren, looked up sharply.
Dancer.
Spanish tried again.
Thank you,
it said to me. I was silent. What could I say? The first of the absurd came. Flyers squalled over the country, must have seen us, but perhaps decided that we were too nothing to be blown away. A loose, fast-moving posse of tireless absurd became visible, moving toward us. We braced. Some had said something about the plan. Those at the front of the army, the groups a kilometre or so ahead of the main force, saw us. They stampeded up the scree and at us, pointing gift wings, directing segments of their own crowd, which peeled off into wedge shapes, flanked us, in the unsaid strategy they thought merely rage. I could hear their hoofbeats. Then I could see the shades of their skins, the craned forks of their eyes, the flanges of their fan-wing stubs as they raised weapons. "Now," someone said, and I truly couldn't say if it was me. Spanish said something too quiet for me to quite hear, that I don't think was in language. It walked forward with the other leaders of its revolutionary group, and the absurd came with them. It went farther, stepped out and raised its gift wing and the stalk of its fan wing, so its injury was plain. It waved them like standards. It announced its status. "I'm one of you," and urged its comrades to stop, gestured to all the incomers, "Wait, wait, wait, wait." The absurd army didn't slow at all. I felt sick.
"Courage," Bren said in French.
I did not smile. The inchoate motion language Fanwingless spoke was camouflaged by shared purpose. From their untidy ranks came a shot.
"Jesus," I said.
Spanish dancer.
Spanish.
Spoke with its voice and hands as its once fellows approached to murder or brutalize it. I wondered what would happen to it if it were deafened now that language was different for it. Spanish's and the absurd's motions registered to the enemy as little as wind-blown plants. "They're not ignoring," I thought. "They don't know." They didn't know that these minds weren't like the others they'd finished or changed. How could they? I dug among our packs.
"Show your fan wings," I shouted to Spanish. "Show them you can hear."
Ilsib began to translate, but Spanish was already unfurling, and the others were copying it, except for Dub and Rooftop, who did so only when Spanish told them to in language. Another missile came close.
"Tell Dub and Rooftop to get in front," I said.
I made a datchet play, and the thin voice of Ez Kal exhorted us to something or other. But every one of the Ariake had already heard that speech, so did not react to it, and I cursed and threw it away.
"Oh," said Bren.
He understood. I fumbled again while the absurd came close enough that I could hear their murder croons. I spilled a handful of chips and finally got another to sound. Ez Kal said, "We are going to tell you what it is that you must do." We Tear heard it as sound. Spanish Dancer and the others heard it too now as sound. They just cocked their fan wings quizzically. But Dub and Rooftop were still addicts. They snapped upright, shuddered so elementally it was as if gravity took them toward the source of the voice. They glazed.
"Yes," said Bren.
I played another. Dub and Rooftop were swaying, recovering from Ez Kal's first words. Jerked giddily, they were caught up again. Rooftop shouted at what was, I realized, Ez Kal's description of trees. Our self-deafened Ariekis kept waving at the others, and Spanish and the others mimicked it, their own fan wings opening and closing, and in the middle of them all, Dub and Rooftop lost themselves. I kept the sound going.
"Stop,"
said Spanish, and I could think how horrible the sight of that powerless staggering must be to it, reminding it what it had been, making it watch its friends suffering in compulsion. But I wouldn't cease. As the first of the absurd crested our rise and came toward us, weapons up, first one, then more, then many hesitated. I pressed another chip and heard Bren say, "Yes." Every army has one soldier at its very front. A big Ariekis, its cut-and-turn mouths open as if it were howling, picking its feet high as it came for us. I was holding out a dat chip as if it might stop it. Its eyes spread in all directions, one for each of us, watching Spanish and the Ariekes that had been our captive, jerking its arms as the absurd did to each other, and Dub and Rooftop stumbling. If I was thinking anything, I was praying. It was very close. Abruptly, the soldier stopped. It lowered its sputtering mace. It involuted its eyes, opened them again, and watched us. I was still playing Ez Cal's voice. It wasn't the only motionless one now. As if I were merciless, I made Dub and Rooftop dance their addiction. The absurd gripped each other, gestured or stood still, watching.
"Don't stop," said Bren.
"Stop," said Spanish,
and Bren said again,
"Don't."
"What?" said Sib.
"What is it?"
said Ill. The army of hopeless and enraged had been driven to murder by their memories of addiction, and the sight of their compatriots made craven to the words of an interloper species. That degradation was the horizon of their despair. I'd make them see the motions of their ex-selves hearing their god drug. There was no mistaking that, Tarantella. But that other Arieke had fan wings unfurled, could hear, but were unaffected. There wasn't supposed to be such a thing as uncertainty in the minds of the absurd. Its sudden arrival arrested them. Our ex-captive waved its gift wing and its stump. "Stop," it was saying. And many in the army that faced us knew that it was saying so and were stunned to know that they knew it. Poor Rooftop, I thought. Poor Dub. Ariekeen dust coiled around me and I blinked. Thank God they never learnt to lie. We'd needed real addicts to prove that the others were free, and the rage of the absurd therefore misdirected. I kept Dub and Rooftop moving. I made them sick on God drug. Spanish dancer watched them, fanned its fan wing. I was shouting.
Information moved desperately slowly among the absurd. Even their quickest thinkers still had only a tenuous understanding that they could transmit information. What they said to each other at first with their waving and upheld limbs was simple. "Don't attack." Following that, "Something is happening." The information was discombobulated with distance, moving backward through the rank. At the front, gestures got close to, "They can hear, but are not addicted." Farther back, ranks of the absurd told those behind them simply, "Stop."
"Stop,"
said Spanish. Our deaf went to the front of the army, and Spanish went with it. With the absurd generals watching, the two of them, ostentatiously, in wing signs and sigils scraped in the earth, ideograms that startled me, started to talk. There were many, many hours, 2 days and nights of frustration and silences while the army waited, hesitated. Individuals kept coming up from the ranks to see what was happening. Everyone that did was astonished. Unaddicted Arieke, Tear waiting respectfully. The process of slow dawning between hearing and absurd, as we still questionably called them. Scrawls in dirt. Those with a little knowledge became agents of patience among the others. We could see their influence, by whatever gestural persuasions, when, toward the end of the second day, human refugees approached from the army's flank, easily killable, but the fan wingless didn't assault them. The Tear must have realized that the absurd had stopped, wondered at the strange calm and come to find its source, and the languageless had let them. The refugees set up camp away from us and watched. It took a time before the boundary of comprehension between absurd and
dancers.
Spanish group, the new hearing, was more fully breached, but nothing like so long as I'd once have expected. We weren't teaching the deafened to communicate. We were showing them they already could, and did. It wasn't incremental, but revelatory, and revelations, though hard won, are viral. "We need Ez Cal here," I said.
"They won't come if they know what's happened," Bren said. "If they know that they've lost."
"Even if it means the end of the war?" But I knew he was right. "Well, then we can't tell them the truth. We see any Vesp cams, we smash them. They can't know what's happened." Towler and Baptist understood the mission we gave them. They wouldn't have done a few days before. They returned to the city in a flyer with the absurd. "They know what they have to do," I said to Spanish Dancer.
"Yes."
They'd sneak back in the wounded ship, take on the roles of loyal addict soldiers, bringing news of a breakthrough. They'd tell Ezcal that the absurd had stopped, were just waiting, and that the god drug and their entourage must come. It couldn't occur to Ezcal that they were being lied to. That was what we were relying on. How could it? They would, after all, hear it from Arieke, in what they would think was language. Say it like a host. "They know what to do when Ezcal speaks to them."
"Yes."
They knew to seem as if it swept them over. "They know to ask for them to speak, if too long goes by without."
"Yes."
They knew to mimic the addiction. They knew what they had to do. The two different tribes of post-language Arieke shared symbols. The human refugees made no attempt to come closer. "Did we do it?" I said. Surrounded by semiosis, Dub at last juddered and abruptly achieved change and withdrawal, apropos of nothing I saw, gasping and speaking newly. Its companions watched its unexpected transcendence or fall. Rooftop, though, couldn't reach it. It dosed itself with the last of the dat chips. It was the only addict left among us. I don't know what the parameters of friendship were among the Arieke, but I think that they must all have been sad. And Rooftop, Leafbeth, as its name was, must have been lonely. It watched the scratch and gesture conversations around it, and I thought that being surrounded by the changed must be, for it, like a mild hell. "You did save us," I thought at it. "Without you, we'd have died." As if that could comfort it. Every day Spanish told me of the progress. When I consider what it was that actually happened, what the absurd and the new hearing achieved, it took no time at all. I don't know how many days of camping among these silent discussions it had been, when I realized that there were cams watching us, eddying nervously in the wind. But I knew we were past ready. "Jesus," I said, and pointed them out to Bren. "Christ Veritecton." I stood below the cams, gesturing at them like newly expressive Arieke, beckoning them. They were scouts from a school around Ezcal's ship. It couldn't be far. They'd come following the directions and promises of Towler and Baptist. Some Vesp cams seemed to want to shy away, others focused on us. It was too late for the god drug to turn back now, block transmissions, pretend ignorance, even if they understood what they were seeing. The feeds from those little lenses were being watched, not only in the oncoming ship, but by thousands of embassy towners. "Listen!" I shouted, and was aware of many Ariekin eyes on me. The lenses scudded, anxious midges came a little lower. "Listen to me," I said, and grit my teeth in the wind. "Listen to me!" "They must have been wondering what the delay was," Bren said. "What was keeping the absurd? How long have they been waiting? Hiding, waiting to die, wondering what's the hold-up?" "Listen," I said. "Get them here. Get Ezcal here, now." I pointed at Spanish Dancer, at the fan-wingless to which it spoke, and first Spanish, then one by one all the hundreds of absurd, pointed at me. The cams buzzed, changing positions, and I kept my eyes on one fixed point, as if the little swarm were one entity into whose eye I stared. "Get them here, now! Ezcal! Can you see me, Ezcal?" I jabbed my hand. "Cal, get here now, and bring your fucking sidekick with you! You get to live, so spread the word. Embassy Town, can you hear me? You get to live! But you better get here and find out what you have to do, Ezcal. Because there are some conditions." 29. I'll give Ezcal this. when they didn't speak, when they stood to look out over the ridge, down kilometres of country and the camp town of the absurd, they looked epic. They didn't deserve it. They'd come to affect Baroque. Perhaps it was a comfort to some embassy towners. There were trims of glitter on Cal's clothes, a crest on his Aeoli mask. Even Ez wore purple. In silence, their failings were transmuted, or camouflaged at least. Cal's sneer passed for regal, Ez's sulking a thoughtful reserve. They had a small entourage, people who had recently been my colleagues. Some greeted me and Bren when their flyer landed. Simon shook my hand. Southall had come, and Magdar. I couldn't describe their expressions. Wyatt was with them, still guarded, it seemed, but consulted, great operator, prisoner, vizier. He didn't meet my eye. Baptist and Towler stepped down, back from Embassy Town, greeted their companions, greeted me. The Embassy Towners watched them, in what must have been great shock. This journey hadn't turned out as expected. The officers who'd come had weapons. I know that if the situation had been a little different, Ez Cal might have tried to have them kill us, as they'd tried to kill us when we travelled. Now, though, the remnants of the staff in their pointless retinue, and the officers and even Jasmine, who were there, wouldn't let them. By now, everyone in Embassy Town had seen the incoming army and my transmission, and everyone knew that we had stopped them. All Cal had for a last few hours was the pretense that he ruled. Those Tear refugees had come closer day on day. They were mingling with us now, though mostly all they did was watch our interactions with the absurd. Ez looked into the sky and back across the distance toward Embassy Town. Much later, I'd hear stories of his actions during my travels. How he'd contrived to test Cal's patience, the plans for what could only be considered a coup, which Cal had crushed more in contempt than anger. Ez eyed us. I could see him calculating. Jesus, do you never stop? I thought. I didn't give a shit about his story. To Embassy Town and the Languageless, Ez and Cal's squabbles were vastly less important than that they were Ez Cal. I stood with delegates from the absurd army, 20 or 30 thrown up from the ranks.
So it's you I'm talking to, is it? Arvis Ben-Acho?
Cal said coolly.
You speak for...
He indicated the fanwingless closest to me, our erstwhile captive. Thuth, I said. It goes by Thuth.
What do you mean, it goes by Thuth? He said. It doesn't go by anything.
We call it Thuth, I said. So that's what it goes by. I'll show you how to write that down. Or better, Thuth will. Bad enough to be defeated, isn't it? Even now you try to take us out, Cal. Me, Bren, the rest of us. Because the way we saved Embassy Town means the end of your reign. As it has. Look. Ended. And even though your whole damn prefecture was a function of despair and collapse, you'd rather lose it on your terms than be saved on ours. That was what I wanted to say. They were absurd with Thuth and Spanish, those most adept at the generation of the ideogrammatic script they were inventing, the most intuitive at the reading and performing of gestures. It wasn't a stable group. Even a few brave Ariekine addicts had arrived, too, come all the way from the city, subsisting on pilfered datchips, to see the historic agreement, the change. Rooftop was there, playing its own sound files to itself in sadness. Human runaways squatted on overlooking ledges coloured with Ariekine mottled moulds and watched the negotiations. They came and went as they wanted. Cal, perhaps Ez too, tried to depict what was happening as protracted discussion. Really, it was just a slow process of explaining facts and receiving orders in a nascent script. What took days was making sure the absurd understood and understanding what they wanted us to do about it. You've no authority, I could have said to Cal. This is a surrender. You'd love a bit of pomp. That way in later years you might invoke end-of-empire ghosts.
but you're just here because I told the absurd you were the one they'd have to tell what to do. And the humans watching, the refugees scowling under their cowls, are going to remember how it's obvious that you don't know what's happening. You're doing a lot of hanging around during this particular change of epoch, because you're only a detail. Cams went everywhere. There were a proliferation of independent home-rigged kits, or those hijacked or gone rogue and uploading their feeds to whatever frequencies they could. Embassy Town was watching on the other side of all the lenses. At night, the Arieke surrounded my party. We asked them to. I still wasn't certain Ez-Kal wouldn't attempt revenge.
"What's going to happen?"
Magdar said. They looked at me with wariness and respect. "It'll be different," I said. "But we will be here. Now they know they can be cured, it changes everything. How is it in the city and in Embassy Town?" Panic and expectancy. Among the Arieke, it was still mostly confusion. There was fighting between factions. They'd seemed united under Ez-Kal's proxy, Cora, and obeyed Ez-Kal's orders, but now they fought for reasons difficult to make sense of. They'll do everything they can to spread this, I said. No more fixes necessary. We're trying to work together. Thuth mostly speaks for the languageless now. Spanish is talking to us, to Ilsib, obviously, but it can even... Magdar hadn't seen Spanish and me in the evenings, talking, haltingly. "But I have to tell you something," I said to her quietly. "I've heard how people are describing what this is, and it's wrong. There is no cure. Spanish and the others, they might not be addicted anymore, but they're not cured. They're changed. That's what this is. I know it might sound the same, but do you understand that they can't speak language anymore, Magdar? Any more than you ever could." It was a morning, very cloudless. In the lower lands around me, among the filamented undergrowth of the planet, I knew there were agents of script disseminating the new skill, the concept of it, among the absurd. Already there were deviant forms from those first suggested, dissident renditions of ideograms, specialist vocabulary created by the semiogenesis of scuff and point. It wouldn't be long before some Ariekin reader reproduced the ground-scratch writing in stain on something they could hand over, rather than trying to remember and replicate it. Maybe we'd show them how. I imagined a pen held in a gift wing. The leading cadre of the absurd stood still. The Embassy Town entourage were as smart as they could manage in these circumstances. Various of the human refugees were watching. Thuth and Spanish stood close to me, looking at the cams. Spanish attracted my attention with its gift wing.
"You are ready?"
It spoke to me softly. I hesitated, and it spoke again.
"Are you?
Ez-Kal faced me. They looked like kings again. Ez's face was blank, Kal's was swollen with anger. "Listen. Do you understand?" All the Embassy Towners could hear me easily, but it was Ez-Kal I was speaking to. "Do you understand how it's going to be? The absurd are coming back to the city, and so are we. We'll set things up together. They'll have some ideas. I tell you, if I were Cora Sagis, your little quisling, I'd be careful. It was smart of you not to let it come. We'll work out the details. We'll be there in Embassy Town." Until the relief, everything's different, forever, I thought. I glanced at my notes. "They were going to kill us because we were the source of God drugs. They knew it was too late for them. They were lost. But they were going to make a totally new start for those after them if they got rid of the problem. Us. You understand how selfless they were. It wouldn't help them. It was for their kids. This generation would either be deafened, dead, or dying in withdrawal. But now they know the addicted can be cured." I ignored Magdar's stares and pointed at Spanish. It pointed back at me. "And if they can be cured, then we're an irrelevance. That is why we get to live. See? But they have to be cured. That's the condition. Otherwise, we're still a sickness. and it takes time to cure Orites. I gestured at rooftop, still untouched by metaphor. Everyone looked at it. It looked back. And there's plenty of them. So your job is to keep them going in the meantime, Ez-Kal, till they don't need you anymore. Without you to tide them, the addicted'll start to die. Too quick to be cured, or even deafened. So you have to keep them alive.
It's love,
Spanish said. There were gasps from all the humans who'd never heard it speak its doubled Anglo-Ubic. Spanish was explaining again why the absurd would have killed us all and mutilated their compatriots, and why they would now let us live. The Arieke loved the Arieke. That verb of ours was the only one that came close. It wasn't flawless, but that's in the way of translation. It was as much a truth as a lie. The new hearing and the absurd loved the addicted and would cure them one of the two ways out, induct them into one group or the other. None of you have been ambassadors for a long time, I said. Who've you been speaking for but yourselves? And now you're not a god or a fix or a functionary, Ez-Kal. You're a factory. The Arieke have a need, you fulfill it. And believe me, the content'll be policed. Ez's face didn't move. Cal's twisted. No chance to issue orders that could, literally, not be disobeyed. The city'll be full of absurd, so if you try to stir things, put instructions in what you say, even restart the war, they'll stop you. If we're too much trouble to bother with, we're gone. They don't want to take the fan wings of all the addicted, deafen every single adult Arieke in their cycle. Now there's another way. But they will if they think they have to. Do you see? There's nothing else for you to do, I thought. You have no choice. Those officers, the ones you brought with you, will hold weapons to your heads and demand you speak language if necessary. And I'll be with them. Spanish and the absurd would spread the two cures. Recourse to the knife wasn't the existential catastrophe it had been for all those here who'd thought it ended thought. It would never be relished, but for those who couldn't get clean, it might be considered. Every day, out of love for their afflicted fellows, the Arieke would make Ez-Kal speak. We were a temporary necessity. Cal looked so stricken, I almost felt pity. It won't be so bad. There were many ways we might live until the ship came. Do you understand? I said to Cal, to Ez-Kal, and to everyone listening, on the plateau and in Embassy Town. I loved the sound of my voice that day. You see why we're even alive. You have a job to do.
Like to be like me,
Spanish dancer said. Somewhere there was a series of human gasps, and I heard someone say, No! Spanish spread its eye coral. Ez looked up. Cal turned. A figure came at us from higher on the hill, a dark, cloaked man. He was followed by a few frantic refugees, shouting. His cape gusted. Curious absurd parted for him, watching what he was doing, and I shouted, No! But of course they didn't hear. I gesticulated for them to close ranks, but they were new to tear gestures, and I didn't have time to make them understand. The man pulled out a weapon. Through his stained old aioli, I could see it was Sile. My husband aimed a fat pistol at me. We were all too slow to stop him. Even as he came, I stared, and as I tried to think how to stop what he was going to do, somewhere below that, I was working out where he'd gone, and how, and why, and what he was doing now. I stared at the nasty, pouting mouth of the gun. He changed his aim as he came, pointing at Bren and Spanish Dancer. I tried to push the Ariekis away, but Sile wasn't aiming at it now, but at Ez, and then at Cal. And Cal began to turn his eyes to me. Sile fired. Calls and screaming started in Tear and Ariekin voices, as in a plume of blood where energy took and opened him. Cal fell away, staring at me, and died. Part 9.
The relief. 30. This is what
dancer Spanish said. It was in a plaza in the city, a big square made bigger by cajoling the buildings. I remember it very well. Bren stood by me and whispered a translation, but I could make almost perfect sense of it all. I remember the weather, the houses, the air and the crowd of Arieke. Thousands, addicts jostling to the edges of the opening. Some must have expected Ezcal, wanted their god drug fix. This is what Spanish dancer said.
Before the humans came, we didn't speak so much of certain things. We were grown into language. After history, we made city and machines and gave them names. We didn't speak so much of certain things. Language spoke us. The words that wanted to be city and machines had us speak them so they could be. When the humans came, they had no names, and we made new words so they would have places in the world. They didn't do as other things do. We spoke them into language. Language took them in. We were like hunters. We were like plants eating light. The humans made their town in our town, like a star in a circle. They made their place like a filament in a flower. We spoke the name of their place, but we know it had another name. Sitting in the city like an organ in a body, like a tongue in a mouth. Before the humans came, we didn't speak so much because we were like this one, who years ago was the girl who was hurt in darkness and ate what was given to her. We were like her. You decide why we were like her and why we were not like her. Why she's like herself or is not. We've been like all things. We left the city during the drug time and speak more now. Before the humans came, we didn't speak. We've been like countless things. We've been like all things. We've been like the animals over Embassy Town, in the direction of which I raise my gift wing, which is a speaking you'll come to understand. We didn't speak. We were mute. We only dropped the stones we mentioned out of our mouths, opened our mouths, and had the birds we described fly out. We were vectors. We were the birds eating in mindlessness. We were the girl in darkness, only knowing it when we weren't anymore. We speak now, or I do, and others do. You've never spoken before. You will. You'll be able to say how the city is a pit and a hill, and a standard, and an animal that hunts, and a vessel on the sea, and how we are fish in it. Not like the man who swims weakly with fish, but the fish with which he swims. The water. The pool. I love you. You light me. Warm me. You are suns. You have never spoken before.
That was what Spanish dancer said to its gathered people. It said more. It was much less clumsy with them than I'd been when I changed it. It understood much better the psyches it wanted to alter, and its words were surgery. At first, those in the square listened, not knowing what for. As its words grew more outlandish and impossible, there were brayings of consternation. They were raucous, as they would be at any virtuoso lies. Then something much more. There was a hysteria of admiration and concern. As Spanish spoke, Arieke shouted in more than astonishment. These were the sounds of crisis. I remembered them from when I'd taught Spanish dancer to lie. I was hearing minds reconfigured, deaths, old thoughts dying. I saw the upthrown gift wings and fan wings of ecstasy, ecstasy in an old sense, not without pain and terror, of visions, and then the silence of the adult Arieke, new born. There were only a few that first time. Most who listened were left terrified, perhaps, tremulous, having glimpsed something. When at last they calmed, some eventually clamoured for Ezcal again, their need making them forgetful. But there were others who tipped over, became new things, learnt language at what Spanish dancer said. I understood almost every word it spoke. Sometimes, when Spanish dancer is talking to me in my own language, it doesn't say metaphor, but lie that truths, or truthing. I think it knows that pleases me. A present for me. 31. Poor Sile. How do I tell this? Most mornings I go to Lilypad Hill. The adjutants and I discuss plans. Anything yet? I say, and every morning so far they've checked the readings and shaken their heads. Not yet, and I've said, well, soon. Be ready. Can I say poor Sile, after everything? I can. His actions disgust me. There are dead friends who'd be alive if it weren't for him. But could you not feel pity to see him? He's in the jail we made from the infirmary. His neighbours are those failed ambassadors still too broken to walk out of the doors when we opened them. Sile knows he's alive because, criminal as he is, he didn't do anything so very bad, so unforgivable, as to warrant execution. We've decided we don't have the death penalty just for murder. I go to see him sometimes. People understand. It's pity, concern, curiosity, and the ghost of affection. He can't believe what's happened. He can't believe he so failed. It was pandemonium when he killed Cal. I'm surprised he wasn't shot in turn, that we were able to take him alive.
"You will not do this," he said.
Cal still twitched on the ground. Sile swung his gun at Spanish dancer.
"They will not be like you."
We stopped him before he fired again. Spanish smacked his pistol away, grabbed Sile's shirt and said to him,
"Why?"
Sile put his hands over his ears and called Spanish dancer a devil. It hadn't been a suicide walk, but a pilgrimage. He'd gone to find the absurd army, to walk behind them, a witness and apostle while they, what, cleaning fire, holy avengers who'd rather cut themselves than be tainted by lies, purged the ruined Arieke, got the world ready again, a nursery for unborn, pure, languaged young. It had been a brutal hope, but it had been hope. I'm sure Sile heard when Ezcal was born, no matter where he was. I don't know how word could have reached him, but word does. He must have known Ezcal and their orities couldn't withstand the absurd, but he didn't reckon with me and Bren and Spanish dancer. The horror he must have felt to see us and what we did from the camps beside the army. He was patient, waiting until the god drug arrived before doing his holy work. He sacrificed himself, he must have thought, for the absurd. Perhaps he had in mind the child Arieke that would one day walk through empty embassy town, think of explanations for its ruins and say them in language. Sile was ready for us all to die. He wasn't quite wrong. There had been a fall. The Arieke are different now. It's true that now they speak lies. Poor Sile. I'll say it again. He must think he's fallen among Lucifers. Recently, a Maiab incame to Lilypad Hill. We were no longer the people to whom it had been sent. I think that's why I felt what I can only call naughtiness opening it. I felt what only I would recognize as the faintest immerdamp around it. Like bad children, we pulled out treats. Wine, foods, medicine, luxuries. There were no surprises. We opened our orders, and Wyatt's sealed instructions too. He didn't try to stop us. They were no surprise either. The new Arieke can speak to Ortima, and can understand them. I don't want to go in, I said.
It's fine. It's just...
Bren nodded. He and Spanish Dancer took longer than I expected. I waited in the street, watched hoardings move. The products they advertise aren't sold anymore. They rejoined me.
She's there, Bren said.
And?
We spoke to it.
And? I said. Did she speak to you? I said to Spanish. It and Bren looked at each other.
I don't know.
I looked up at her building. There must be cams at points. There are cams everywhere, and my friend had always been part of her surroundings. I didn't wave.
Ursel, I know that you can understand the words I'm saying, Spanish said.
Bren said,
in Anglo. And she doesn't even look back. She goes, no, you can't speak to me. Arieke can't understand me. Arvis would like to know how you are, it says, what you've been doing. She says, Arvis, how is she? And you can't speak to me. You don't understand me. And you can't speak anything but language.
We passed an avenue of outdated trids, a grassroots market. Well, I said nothing, and Bren did not insist. In the command economy of our reconstruction, our basics are provided, but extras, luxuries, throw up such barter. They make me think of markets in other cities, on other places. The blockades have been taken down. Some city dwellers say that as they can breathe our air, but we can't breathe theirs, the embassy town atmosphere should be extended over the whole city. Where there are new additions being grown, Ariekin buildings are subtly unclassic. Here a spire, an angled window, a familiar kind of buttress. Our tear topographies become fashionable. Cora can't be found, and Dol Tun can't be found, or no one who knows where they are, human or indigenous, will say. Of course, their disappearances made me suspect Club Justice. But I'm in informing networks as good as any, and if something like that has happened, it's been very quiet. Which is no way to encourager les autres.
I think probably either that they were some of the many killed and effaced by the war, or that one is, or both, are hiding. It's not as if you can't still do that in the city, waiting for whatever. I suppose we'll have to be vigilant. Dol Tun's one thing, as far as I'm concerned. As for Cora, though, I don't think revenge of Lynch or any other kind is what most new Arieke want. If they even say they lived under Cora. No Arieke I know have been able to answer my questions about what it was like, about whether they remember how they thought before. About language. Spanish Dancer's first speech about that change was as much inflection as exposition. I don't say they don't remember. I say that they can't tell me how it was if they do. No one knows why some Arieke are immune to metaphor. No attention from Spanish or its growing number of deputies, its proselytizers, altering their listeners with careful, infectious, ostentatiously lie-filled sermons, works on all of them. Each meeting there are successes. Arieke staggering out of language into language and seams. Others come close, to go next time or the next. And there are those who refuse to, and those that, like Rooftop, sick with purity, just can't. They still can't speak to me, only to ambassadors. They only understand a dying language. Now we have the drugs, the voices, to keep them alive, and no more gods. Ez Say, I heard one Oriti tell Ilsib, was its favourite, because the tremor occasioned by their voice was... And their vocabulary, mine and its, failed us. Others prefer Ez Lot or Ez Bel, according to the high they give. Sile was usually a better thinker than his last murder would imply. He knew how it created Ez Kal. He should have thought we could just do it again. We unhooked the mechanisms from inside Kal's head, and they were safe. But even had they not been, we never faced another end. "I've got something," Magdar had said. "Suvel's been putting together a few prototypes for weeks. Boosters. We've had volunteers. We're ready to go." While we'd pursued ours, that had been their secret plan. A stockpile against Kal and Ez Kal, whose power lay in their uniqueness. Magdar's and my and Bren's treacheries dovetailed. Sile had brought no narrative to a conclusion. He killed Kal, and very little changed. At first, it was the cleaved Tern who volunteered, shaved their heads and had sockets implanted, tried out boosters like clawed tiaras, hooked into links, and let gun-prodded Ez, Rakowski, read them and speak with them. Lot was the first to take on the role, while her doppel, Shah, was still alive. Some are afraid to, but many ambassadors have powered down their own links. They don't equalize. They don't speak language much anymore. There's not much call. I don't think they all dislike each other. Bren says he disagrees, but I tell him he can't think beyond his own history, which is understandable. We keep Joel Rakowski safe because we need him and his freakish empathic head, but even that, I think, will change. We'll find others like him. In the meantime, we work him hard and stockpile hours of drug talk. We can afford to be generous to the Exoduses. It's two cities now, one of the addicts, one of all the others, that intersect politely. The absurd and the new have much more in common than either do with the Orites. Hearing's nothing. The absurd and the new think the same. Spanish exchanges politenesses with Arieke at every corner, with the Tear, with the Fanwingless too, by the touchpads they carry, our Tear-Tech contribution. I'm learning to read and write their evolving scrawl like a young Arieke's. As soon as they awake into their third instar now, like some rough ritual, they're hard-trained out of their instincts. They have only a few liminal days of pure language, when word is referent and lies are uncanny, between animal instar and consciousness. Afterward, the young, new Arieke know their city wasn't always this way, but can't imagine it other. Of those that can't unlearn language, some are deafening themselves, knowing it'll cure them, that it's not the cutting out of speech and mind they might once have thought. Others, like Rooftop, are preparing to leave. We'll never visit their autarkic communities. They won't be linked by pipework to the city. We'll hand over many, many dat chips, enough to last a long time. The exiles will live out their addiction and raise a new brood, never let them hear the chips, until their children speak language too, but unafflicted and free. Humans, vectors of addiction, will be banned and taboo. The city, where they speak differently now, they'll explain, will be taboo. For the next little future, it's not humans, but the new Arieke that'll ambassador between the city and the settlements. I know how it'll go, though. A new Ariekes will come to trade. They'll speak to it, language to language, and they'll think they do, but they won't understand each other. Some of the young'll be intrigued by this odd stranger, and a few adventurous language-speaking young will make their way to the city gates. That'll be the story. Doubtless there'll still be addicts here, outcasts, holy fools or whatever their status then, and the newcomers will hear the drug talks broadcast for them and instantly be addicted too. The ship's crew will have weapons, of course, Bremen weapons, more advanced than ours. But we're very many, and they'll be few. Besides, we mean them no harm. We'll have an honour guard. "Welcome, Captain," I'll say as the doors open onto Ariekin soil. Please come with us. There'll be guests as much as prisoners. That's tendentious. They'll be prisoners, but we'll treat them well. According to Wyatt's instructions, our next relief is due to deliver to Embassy Town several new ambassadors of Ezra's kind. They've improved their empathic techniques. Ezra was the test. Next was supposed to come Bremen's coup. Too late. We got our coup in first. Instead, the new ambassadors will have a job pushing product to addicts.
Welcome, Captain,
Spanish dancer will say. It'll gesture politely with its gift wing to the armed Embassy Towners waiting.
You will please come with us.
The new Arieki were astounded to learn that Terre have more than one language. I uploaded French. Je suis, I said. Spanish dancer was delighted. It said to me,
I would like to come with you.
That's not its only innovation. They don't speak Anglo-Ubic here, but Anglo-Arieke. I am a student of this new language. It has its nuances. When I asked Spanish if it regretted learning to lie, it paused and said,
I regret.
A performance, perhaps, but I envy that precision. I wonder if Spanish dancer ever mourns itself, if it lets me read what it's writing, which I'm almost certain is the story of the war. I might find out. It did tell me another story. When Baptiste and Tala returned to Embassy Town, pretending to be Orites, to persuade Ez Kal into the wilderness where we were waiting, the god Drug wouldn't see them. Ez Kal told them instead to relay their message through one of their regular Ariekin entourage, which saw and recognized them as followers of the controversial Tesh-Eshel. It knew something was wrong. It could have given them up. Baptiste and Towler, in an instant and bravura moment of decision, admitted to their contact the true situation. But knew better times were coming for all of them, if Ez Kal could be enticed out. Knowing that, like their prophet, they might be liars, it still decided to believe them. Given hope for the first time in a long time, that functionary went and told Ez Kal exactly what Baptiste and Towler had been about to. But they were new. And it wasn't. It knew the truth, and it had never lied before. It had had to dissemble in language, managing with Herculean effort and luck to get out words that sounded like grunts to itself. That was the real hero of the war, Spanish dancer told me. That nameless Ariekis, telling the only lie of its life. It wouldn't be that hard for Bremen to destroy us. But I think we can make it worth their while not to. War across Immer isn't cheap. We have to make sure we're useful. We know what our use can be. Look at us here, on the dark edge of the Immer. There will be the port they wanted, within a local decade. We'll be the last outpost. That was always our intended role, only now we know it, and while it won't be quite what our metropole had in mind, we can run ourselves. Welcome to Embassy Town, the frontier. I know how fast the stories'll come. I'm an immerser. I've heard them. Just beyond our planet's shores will be, people will say, El Dorado Immerlands, deserted ships long lost, Earth, God. All right then. I know what chances'll come, what pirates. I know the likelihood that Embassy Town will become slum, but will moulder and die. Or be eradicated by Bremen Shiva bomb if we have no use. Sile in his visionary stupidity, trying to save the Arieke, would have damned them. If they killed us, when the relief came, it wouldn't forbear genociding them in return. I remember Sile's not from a colony when he fails to think of such things. So we're to be ravaged by speculation and thrill-seekers. We'll be the wilds. I've been to Deadwood Planets and Pioneer Towns. Even those way stations have their good things. We'll open up the sky. We'll have knowledge to sell. Uniquely detailed maps. Immer byways only locals like us can find. We have to establish our credentials as an explorocracy. so to survive and rule ourselves, we have to explore. We'll soon have one Imaship in our little navy, and at least one captain. When the next Bremen delegation comes to see what to make of us, we'll have something to offer. Immersion's never safe. This far out, at this edge, we're back to the dangerous glory days of Homo diaspora. I don't have any hesitation. I've gone out, I've come back, and it's time to go again, in directions and for distances no immerser has gone. In kilo hours, I might be meeting an exot I'm the first Tear ever to see, working tongue wear, trying to make a greeting. I might find anything. I've been studying navigation and immerology, techniques that I, the floker, had always avoided.
You've never floked in your life,
Bren told me, brusquely, when I said that to him. I've started to dream of how Embassy Town will look, from the ship. That's why I'm at Lilypad Hill every day, because I can't wait. Good morning, Captain. You'll come with us. And I and my crew will take the skiff to orbit, to the ship. Ready, I'll say, and set the helm beyond void cognita. I'll push the levers that set us out. Or perhaps the gracious thing will be to allow my first lieutenant to do it. We don't know how the passage will affect such crew. I've warned them that. They're still insistent. So perhaps it will be Lieutenant Spanish Dancer who'll instigate that indescribable motion from everyday space through the always. We'll immerse into the immer and into the out. It would be foolish to pretend we know what'll happen. We'll have to see how Embassy Town gets shaped. By Embassy Town, I mean the city. Even the new Arieke have started to call the city by that name. Embassy, they say. Or Embassy. Or
Embassy Town.
This is Susan Duerden. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Embassy Town by China Mieville. This program was directed by Christina Rooney, executive producer Dan Zitt. Text copyright 2011 by China Mieville. Production copyright 2011, Random House Inc. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.